Welcome to the pulse that moves the triangle world today. This one-size-fits-all broadcast is a vibrant collection of stories, medical breakthroughs, helpful tips, what's trending, events, and boundless other adventures. It's a conversation pit of comedians, politicians, authors, chefs, sports figures, experts, the common and the uncommon. Here's the host of Triangle 411, Mary Innsbrucker.
Hi, friends. So today we're going to talk about some history in North Carolina. There's so much going on in North Carolina if you're a history buff. And, you know, you don't need to do a vacation to another state. There's all kinds of battlegrounds and surrender fields and all kinds of different historical sites that you can see. And I wanted to talk about this one today. So we'll do from time to time a little bit about historical sites. But something also to keep in mind during the pandemic that there is, you know, it may be restricted, but there are still some things you can get out and do. And that includes the historic Oakview County Park in Raleigh. Today we have with us the assistant park manager, Abby Kellerman, and she's going to kind of give us almost like a mini tour of what you might expect if you would go to historic Oakview. And let's start with a welcome to you, Abby, and maybe some history.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to highlight all things Oakview. So I'll talk a little bit kind of about our park and get an overview of the history. Historic Oakview County Park, we're a historic park located on the east side of Raleigh. And while we're a public park today, the site was a functioning farm for about 100 years, beginning in the mid-1800s all the way until the mid-1900s. So there's a lot of history here. And because of that, on our park grounds, we still have several historic farm buildings. We have a main farmhouse. We have a detached plank kitchen, a cotton gin house, a livestock barn, a tenant house. And then we also have some other features like a water tower, a gazebo. We have gardens. We have herb gardens, vegetable gardens, and then fruit and pecan orchards as well. And those all relate to the history of this farm. And so we have a lot of educational programs and exhibits where we try to teach visitors about the history of the farm. And we focus a lot on rural farm life and how it would have changed over time from that 100-year period. And another feature, which is probably our most popular feature, is that we have some animals who live at the park today. We have 4 goats and also 6 chickens.
Okay, so let's break this down a little bit because that was a lot to take in, and maybe we can talk about each structure individually. But going back to the history a little bit, who owned the farm?
It was several different families throughout the time period. So it began with the Williams family who purchased land around the 1830s. Benton Williams began purchasing land. And eventually his holdings and his sons grew to what we refer to as the farm today. Around that same time period, he also started purchasing enslaved people. So Oakview kind of took on these aspects of a plantation before the Civil War. The Williams family lived here. They built their farmhouse in 1855. And they lived on the farm in some capacity until 1886. And we know that prior to the Civil War, there were also between 12 and 14 enslaved people living on the property. And after the late 1880s, the farm actually transitioned to a different family. The Wyatt family purchased Oakview, and they have a pretty interesting connection to Raleigh. They operated the Wyatt, Joe P. Wyatt and Son Seed Company, seed store in downtown Raleigh. And when they purchased Oakview, they actually did not live here at the farm. They hired a farm manager, first the Washingtons and then the Joneses, who lived in the main farmhouse. And they actually worked as a farm manager to oversee kind of a system of farm laborers and sharecroppers and tenant farmers who also lived on the property. They did that until the 1940s when another family purchased Oakview, the pools, and they lived here for only a couple years, but they actually made some pretty extensive changes to a lot of the buildings. And so kind of we have things left over from them as well. And there were a couple families after that, who owned the property, and it, was not until the 1980s that Wake County, took over management of the property. It was actually supposed to be turned into a business park. So the whole, all the buildings were going to be destroyed. You know, all the farmland was going to go away. But there were several, you know, really invested and interested citizens and commissioners who decided to save the park and save the property and turn it into a public park. So that's kind of the evolution of there were actually several different families who both owned and lived on the property throughout a pretty extensive history.
That's very interesting. Two things I want to go back to. So during this time when it was a farm, I know you mentioned a pecan orchard and then the seed mm-hmm. company. So was this like a, you know, what kind of farm was it through the years? I mean, was there livestock, et cetera?
Yeah, so that's something that changed over time as well. So it began, you know, more as a cotton plantation prior to the Civil War. And by the time the Wyatt family took it over, they did operate it as a cotton farm. They were the ones who actually had the cotton gin house built so then they could gin their own cotton on the property. But around that same time period, the price of cotton starts to go down. And then you also see the effects of the boll weevil, which was a pest who devastated many, many cotton farms in the South. And so that kind of caused the Wyatts to transition to different types of farming, kind of transition away from cotton. So they had a pretty extensive truck farming operation with fruits and vegetables. And then, like you mentioned, that's around the time that's when they also planted all the pecan trees. And that's why we still have that grove today. It used to be many, many acres. And, you know, that's what they sold to make money. Today, we have a much smaller part of the grove. Some of that's due to highway development, and kind of how the land of the park has changed. But we still have a pretty substantial pecan grove as well.
Well, that's good. That's really something to see. So I just want to break down a lot of the structures and then even like the gardens, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But let's start one thing at a time. Tell us about the farmhouse.
Sure. So I'll tell you about as much as I know. know about it. The way that we study history is kind of through the records that have been left. And kind of as a result of all these different families owning Oakview over time, we do not have a very significant archival collection. Most of what we know comes from either census data or other primary sources like that. So we know that the farmhouse was built in 1855, and we know its architectural style is Greek Revival, which was really popular during that time, and you can still kind of see features of that. But also within the house, you see some of those original 1855 features, but the house itself was also altered over time from different families. Like I mentioned, the farm manager family in the 1900s, they were the ones living in the house, and they had a lot of kids. So they expanded the house a little bit. They kind of added on some shed porches, more bedrooms to accommodate those children, and rerouted some of the stairways and things like that. So the house changed again in the 1900s. And then I mentioned the Poole family in the 1940. They made some of the most expensive changes to the house. They added an addition, which is a slightly different architectural style. So that's kind of the easy way to figure out what is in the original style and what's that 1940 addition. That was the Colonial Revival style. So it looks a little bit different, but still architecturally very compatible with the original house. And the Poole family, in addition to adding on to the house, they were the ones who added electricity in, which was a big change. That wasn't until 1940 that there was electricity on the farm. And that's when they also built inside the house a kitchen. So prior to that, the kitchen was a detached, outdoor separate building kitchen.
So if I'm visiting and I'm walking through this, I'm seeing, you know, would I get the feeling of a 1940s house or an 1800s house? Or a little bit of both?
So I think a little bit of both. The house is actually empty right now. So there isn't really any furniture to kind of give you, that would probably be the easiest indication of figuring out what time period it is. We are conceptualizing and working on a plan to eventually put an interpretive exhibit inside the house to more fully explain all of this history. But we do also have a self-guided mobile tour that you can take while visiting. And that kind of breaks down the history as well.
So you, everything's self-guided. There's no, docents or tour guides.
So right now, because of the coronavirus, all of our programs and tours are on hold. So we're not offering those right now. And none of our buildings are open. So the best way right now to learn about the history of the site is to walk around the park grounds outside and take that self-guided mobile tour. That's always available. In normal instances, we do offer property tours about the history of the farm, and those are always scheduled in advance for groups of people.
Okay. So a family just coming out, could they schedule, and I'm talking normal times, we'll get into the whole COVID and what's going on with that and your virtual programs and such, but in normal times, I would be able to just come with my family and get a guided tour, or I'd have to set up an appointment for that?
Yes, we only do guided tours in advance for groups. So for families, we always have our self-guided tour option.
Okay. So it has to be a big group to have a guided tour.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was going to ask you about period pieces because I know a lot of these historical homes are lucky enough to have things original to the house, or sometimes they'll get things that, you know, it wasn't original to this particular family, but it's still in that time period and so forth. So, that's always a cool thing to see, but, maybe down the road. So let's go in, talk about, I'm just going to go down the line here of a few things you mentioned. So the barn, tell us about the barn.
Sure. So the livestock barn, that was built in, 1900, and, it normally is accessible and has a children's play area in it. So it's really great for kids to learn about, several farm chores. We have, fake animals that they can, you know, play around with, take eggs from the chickens, milk the cow, things like that. And then while it used to house animals and is a historic barn, we still use it today. It's where our goat stalls are. So that's where the goats, if it's raining, they stay inside the barn. And we also put them up into the barn every night because that's where they sleep.
That's great. So yeah, it's like a whole different ball game once there's no COVID, because again, that would be so much fun for kids to milk a cow or gather eggs. So what about the cabin?
Sure. So the tenant house?
Yes, fine. Tenant house. So the cabin is considered the tenant house?
Yes.
Okay.
So originally, we know that there were several tenant houses on the property, and that's where tenant farming families lived. When I mentioned a little while ago about how the property was going to be converted into an office park, around that time, some buildings were already raised, and that unfortunately included the original tenant houses. They were kind of the first to go. So we have oral histories that tell us about the history of these buildings and the families who lived and worked in them. And we also have some aerial photographs from that time period that show us, some of their locations and what they looked like. So, as a way to kind of bring that history back to the park, even though we didn't have the original building, we found a very architecturally similar tenant house in southern Wake County near Wendell. And we actually moved the entire house to the park and spent several years restoring it to make it a little bit more publicly accessible. And right now we are working on an interpretive exhibit that talks about the history of landless farmers. So tenant farmers and sharecroppers were farmers who did not own their own land. So they worked out a deal with a landowner to farm the land, work on the land, and then at the end of the season, they would pay some portion of the money that they made from their crops, or they would split the profits with whatever they sold with the landowner. And that's how they would kind of settle their debts. And so we use that building to talk about this time period of how farming changed in this transition from slavery to sharecropping, and kind of the systems that were available to landless farmers and how they navigated that and created communities and families and worked throughout that time period as well.
Now, I know you said a kitchen was added to the house down the road in time, but you also mentioned you have a plank kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct. So that's actually the oldest building that we have on the property. So that's pretty unique. We date it to about 1825. And a detached kitchen in the South was extremely common, especially during that time period, because all cooking was done over a fire. So you are living in the South. You don't want a really hot kitchen fire in your house, especially in the summertime. So a detached kitchen is a way to keep heat out of the house. It's a way to keep smells out of the house. And especially we know on plantation areas like this, it's also a way to keep the people working in the kitchen outside of the house as well. So the detached kitchen is a feature of a lot of farms in the South. What is not very common is that it was used for so long. I mentioned that electricity didn't come to Oakview until the 1940s. And a lot of that has to do with rural electrification. And that was a big time period for electricity to come. So even though we're not that far from downtown Raleigh today, we're only about 4 miles away from downtown. This was a very rural area. And you can certainly see the effects of that through our buildings and things like that.
So when I go into this kitchen, will I see like a fireplace kind of thing, and maybe some, I don't know how involved the insides of your structures are. Some of the different mm-hmm. places I've gone historically, they'll show, actually they do demonstrations over an open fire when there's different events going on, and you know, there'll be herbs hanging up in the kitchen or whatever. Do you have anything set up like that at the kitchen, or is it just like the actual building?
Sure. So we do not do demonstration cooking because there's a very large tree right above the kitchen. So mm-hmm. that's not a good idea right now. But we do have a display set up, and we have it set up as to what a kitchen would look like. One side of the wall is a big hearth, a big fireplace where the cooking would be done. And we have a lot of interpretive elements and artifacts and herbs that kind of show the evolution and advancements in cooking and what it would have looked like, you know, back in the 1800s and then some early 1900s. Features there as well. And we have a few panels that talk about the history of the building as well.
That's cool. I like to see the insides like that. Now we got to talk about the cotton gin.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So that cotton gin, like I already mentioned, that dates to about 1900. That was another building that the Wyatt family had built. And the cotton gin was important because once the cotton was picked, the only way to sell it was to take the seeds out. So the cotton gin was the machine that separated the seeds from the cotton lint. And so it is a kind of big open barn. And when you can go inside, because once again, it's closed right now, but when you can go inside, it's two stories. And when you go up to the second story, there's kind of a big gaping square hole in the ground that leads right down to the first floor. And that's because the cotton was ginned, was run through the gin machines on the second floor, and then it was tossed down to the first floor where it was packed into bales. And then those bales were loaded up onto wagons and taken down to the market or the railroad, because that's how the cotton was sold from the farm. And an interesting thing about our particular cotton gin is that it was actually a community cooperative cotton gin, which means that different farms from the community could also bring their cotton here, because it wasn't super common to have your own gin on your own cotton farm, especially if you were a smaller farmer. So other people from the community could bring their cotton here and pay a fee to have it ginned by the farm manager who would have been managing that operation as well.
Interesting. Now, gardens, like I like this too. I like to be able to go in buildings, see period pieces, talk about like the kitchen and the herbs and things like that. And then gardens, a lot of times the gardens are historically accurate. Is that the case here at Oakview?
Yeah, so our gardens are really beautiful. They're expertly taken care of by our park manager of operations and maintenance, who works really hard to make them really great. And those are something that you can enjoy right now. So it's a great feature to highlight. We do grow a small patch of cotton next to the cotton gin, and that we use that as part of our educational programs to teach people about kind of the process of from field to fiber, how cotton was turned into fabric. And then we also have some vegetable gardens where a lot of times we plant, you know, heritage seeds and things like that. We have a fruit orchard that has a lot of, you know, heritage as well to it with the things that are grown there. And then, you know, of course, pecan grove that we've already mentioned, which is really historic as well.
Okay, and you touched on programs. So let's get into that. So we know if it wasn't the pandemic right now, well, we know we could go and see all of this, although the buildings are closed, but you could walk around and you could do the self-guided mobile tour, correct?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Okay. So still something for people to get out and do if they're, you know, climbing the walls, because with not too much open, this still would, I think, be a really enjoyable day. But also during this period, you're doing some virtual programs and activities and such. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I'd love to. So like you said, right now our buildings are closed. Our park grounds are open. We do have external restrooms that are also accessible. And so there's a lot of opportunity to still come and walk around the grounds, take the self-guided mobile tour. And then the goats do go out every day. So that's also a great thing to do if you're coming out on a visit, to visit with the goats and the chickens as well. But the primary way that we interact with the public is through our programs and events, which are on hold right now. So since we've been unable to do in-person programs, we've pivoted to offering a lot of online and virtual content. And a lot of that pairs really well to, even if you still want to visit, there are a lot of features that you can access online. We created a scavenger hunt for kids based off of that mobile tour that we've talked about. So that'd be a great activity to do. And we also have a lot of different worksheets and crafts and digital jigsaw puzzles. So if you, you know, if you are still homebound or if you are just looking for something to occupy your time, we have a lot of really great activities and crafts for kids that we've been putting online. We also have started doing a lot of videos, and those feature different artifacts throughout the farm. And we've even done some lighter content, like we do a series of videos called Farm Funnies, where we bring you different farm jokes every week. So that's a great program that we've been doing. And another thing that we've been starting is a Goat Pen Pals program. So you can mail a letter to one or more of our goats, and they will actually write you back. So that's been really popular right now because I think people are just kind of it's a way for us to still connect with our visitors and with the public, because that's what we really love doing. So that's about it. Our virtual content, you can find it all online, and the website is wakegov.com/parks/from home. And
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time?
Absolutely. It's wakegov.com/parks/from home.
From home. And that's where you'd find the scavenger hunt.
Yes. So we have our page. We called our virtual programming page Historic Oak View from Home. So our page is on there, but there are also pages from other Wake County parks. Because we are part of the Wake County Parks Recreation and Open Space Division, which includes several other parks located throughout Wake County. We also operate a few nature preserves, and many, many acres of open space. So, pretty much anywhere where you are in Wake County, you're probably close to one of our parks, and you can find all of our virtual content online as well.
Okay, good. So is there an admission fee?
There is not. Nope. There's no fee, for admission. And all of our programs and events except for cancer are free.
Okay. And then going back to the whole, COVID thing, when is there any, like, there's no definite during this pandemic, but what is the closest guesstimate you might have for reopening, you know, fully the structures and so forth? Has there been any indication of a timeline?
I do not have an exact date to give you right now. Currently, we are, all of our buildings are closed. Programs, events, and camps are canceled, and there are no shelter reservations through at least June 30th. And within that time period, we're also evaluating when park services will reopen. So we are following a phased approach with guidelines from the state and the CDC and things like that. So we're working to kind of safely reopen these services and programs and events, but it'll be a phased approach. And so right now, kind of all that we know is through June 30th.
June 30th, for sure. Okay. So sometime after that, I guess they can check the website then.
Yes, absolutely. We keep our website and our Facebook page updated with these guidelines as well.
Well, I feel like I've just been on a a mini private tour, because you sure covered everything. And again, I, you know, encourage folks, if you're really looking for something to do, although it's on a restricted level, it's still a great afternoon. So Abby, thank you so much for being with us and for all the information.
Absolutely. It was great talking to you.
Now it's time for our nonprofit spotlight. Haven House Services is a place where youth who need help find it. Founded in 1973, the nonprofit operates 11 programs that help more than 1,200 youth in need. Whether they are experiencing homelessness, a crisis at home or school, gang involvement, or problems involving the juvenile justice system, Haven House helps youth identify their goals, connect with needed resources, and build skills needed for long-term success. Haven House, located in Raleigh, serves youth ages 6 through 24 and their families. One of their programs is Wren House, a crisis shelter that provides short-term intervention for youth who are in crisis. For more information, visit havenhousenc.org. Havenhousenc.org. Well, it's time to high five and say goodbye. Thanks for joining us via Apple, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google, etc., or at our website, triangle411.buzzsprout.com. This is Mary Innsbrucker for Triangle 411. Today, be nice.